Okay, we're recording. Do you have any banter?
Not anything particularly great. I bought a $20 terrarium at Target. For a while it just held the smallest of like my Matryoshka doll in it, just a singular itty bitty piece. It's like it's the teeniest little Matryoshka doll. It's like 1 centimeter tall. The ittiest bittiest guy, and he's like in the middle of it, and I just left it that way. And she's like, "Why is that?" Like, yes, I needed something in it, James.
It had to be occupied.
So the innermost Matryoshka doll, that's perfect, right? And then this week we were working out in an over. It's like it was a cornfield, I think, probably like last year, and since there's been a whole bunch of little tiny weeds that have grown up in it, and they were really pretty because they're like little teeny tiny fern slash. Like dandelion looking things. It was like a combo between the two. Like really
Yeah.
lacy little leaves. And then there were some like little red plants. And I was like, oh, these would be really good for this terrarium I have bought.
For your little doll to grow in his garden.
The doll isn't in there anymore. I don't want to ruin
Wow.
him. No. And I was like, and so we had to go back there. We knew we had to go back there. We weren't going to finish the work that day, so we had to go back to the hotel. We were going to be back at the end of the week to finish off that because we had to do another project in between. So I was like, and then I'm going to bring a whole bunch of cups from the hotel and then fill them up with little plants when we're like before we leave. And that's
Yeah.
what I was going to do. And then I got impatient and was scared I wasn't going to find any plants I liked the second day we were out there for some weird reason. You know how anxiety gets you. So I dug up a whole bunch of plants and placed them on my clipboard and then went back to the hotel with them all like on my little clipboard tray and then put them all into the cups there. And they lived that far, so I thought, you know, they'll probably make it in a if they can make that drive and then transfer and then drive again back home. So they're in the car for like 6 hours.
Yeah.
They'll be fine.
Yeah.
And they aren't dead yet. They actually are like, you know, green. They weren't green when I got them,
They're
so
thriving.
they're a little bit dead because it was cold outside still. So
Yeah.
it's a whole bunch of little Missouri weeds in my terrarium, and it's very cute. You want to see a picture?
Yeah. At first you said we were working out, and then you said in a cornfield, so it made it sound like you work out in a cornfield.
No, you're doing a job in a
And I
cornfield.
was like, you don't work
That the
out.
air plant is obviously not native, but the rest of them are. Looks real cute.
It looks nice.
Yeah. Because it's like that pretty red plant, reddish
Yeah.
purple. And then I got a whole pulled a whole bunch of moss. I was sitting there like one of my coworkers was like, "What are you doing, Sadie? Did you find something? Like an artifact?" And I
Yeah.
was like, No, I'm finding
Plants.
moss. I'm finding moss. I'm peeling moss off the
Not doing anything weird. Out of the ordinary.
Just taking my plants. My plants for my terrarium.
I guess I'll go first. Mine's short, but
Okay.
it's okay.
Got a good ghost? Or
It
spook?
has kind of good stories, I
Paranormal
think.
activity? Will I be entertained?
Enough. It's very short, actually. I just noticed
Oh
that.
my goodness.
LOL.
That's okay.
Well, there was a lot of history.
Go
Anyway,
for it.
so today I'm covering the story of the McIntyre Villa.
It still sounds wrong. I know it's right, but like local
Well,
news has decided that's how it's said, but it sounds wrong.
anyway, my sources are visitatchison.com and travelkc.com. So we'll go into the history first. So, John McIntyre was born in Ireland in 1827 and came to the United States alone as a boy.
It's like a loose child.
Yeah, that made me kind of sad.
Yeah.
That's all I know, I guess. He first settled in Philadelphia and then later in Indiana, where he learned the trade of harness making. Hearing of the opportunities existing in the West, he moved to Kansas in the early 1860s, and he set up a home in Doniphan County and started a small shop in Atchison, Kansas, where he manufactured harnesses and saddles. Also, fun fact, Atchison is where Amelia Earhart is from.
She's from
I
Kansas.
had no clue.
And I've never in
Not a
my
single
life
clue.
thought about where Amelia Earhart is from.
No, I assume she was from a coast.
I just didn't
I don't know think why.
Kansas was going to be the answer. You think we would, like, hear more about her then?
I know. But yeah, no.
Maybe she, like, moved way early. Because, like, you know, we love talking about how Disney, you know, lived in whatever that town is.
Missouri.
That starts with an M. Like, constantly. We're always like, yeah, Disney, he lived here. Like, you really think that we'd
no
be like...
He had no choice because he was born here, but still. This is where he's from. Actually.
But you think that it would be like, you know, Amelia Earhart? She's from Kansas.
Yeah, I literally did not know that at all.
Like, you think that would be talked about more?
So, anyway, his products became known for their workmanship, and he did a lot of business with wagon trains. We've talked about wagon trains before. We've learned about them on here. Wagon trains.
Yeah.
We talked about them on here.
You're right, because we had to be like, wait, is that a train of wagons? Is it...
what is it? So we did a lot of business with those wagon trains plying the overland trails. Don't know what that is. His business became so successful that he had to enlarge his facilities and manufacture his products on a larger scale.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting a whole booming business out here. So the wealth he got from his business was invested into real estate in Atchison and St. Joseph, Missouri, which I think that's where the Elms is.
No.
Isn't it?
No.
Where is it at? What's in St. Joe, then?
That we I'm didn't go to
of?
St. Joe. I went to that museum for the tuberculosis hospital.
Maybe
that
that's
was there.
What I'm thinking of. I don't know.
I told you about that.
He also erected a number of business blocks in Atchison. So he's, like, building up this town, it seems like. So, the McIntyre Villa was built in 1889 through, like, 1890 for John McIntyre and costs around $14,000. Soon after the house was built and the McIntyres moved in, John's wife, Alice, was diagnosed with stomach cancer. Oh. And she was found dead in the home while John was away on business in 1892. He married his second wife, Anna Conlin, a widow with three sons, in 1895. I need to stop saying 19. After John's death in 1902, Anna continued living in the house until her death in 1916. And then during her ownership, the house was home to large numbers of her Conlin relatives. I don't know how to say her last name. Including many children, like, I guess, of her family. After,
just like loose Conlin,
yeah,
kids.
I don't
just like
know.
Random cousins.
After 1916, her brother Jude Charles J. Conlin, a prominent Atchison lawyer, and his family made it their home. So for the next 25 years, it was a rooming house. And then in 1952, the McIntyre Villa was purchased by Isabel Altus, a retired professional violinist and an eccentric, why did I say eclectic? Eccentric, according to her neighbors. Sadly, she lacked the funds to follow through with her plans on restoring the home, and in 1969, she sold it to George Girardi, who started to rehabilitate it. And then I don't know who owns it now, because that's just the last.
So it's built by McIntyre, and then his second wife's family exists
lived
there
in it
for
most
of the time.
Yeah. Okay.
Is this
so,
like a big house?
It's a really big house. It's really pretty.
Oh, it's a big house, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really nice. I didn't know if this was like, you know, it's three stories, but actually only has four bedrooms, or if it's like an actual mansion.
It's cool. Also, okay, so now we're getting on to the hauntings. So, Atchison, Kansas is supposed to be, like, the most haunted town in Kansas.
Interesting.
In this town, there's also the Sally House, which is, like, that really haunted house that, like, everybody talks about because it's, like,
I've heard the name,
or
the
whatever.
Sally House. I do not remember its story.
I think Ghost Adventures went there one time. I know the BuzzFeed guys went there. They're not the BuzzFeed guys anymore. I don't know what they work for now. Shane?
Shane. Yeah, that's it.
They stayed overnight there. And I mean, really, I was reading about it because I was like, maybe I should cover that. But then I was like, no, it's oversaturated. And then also, like, I am not understanding why it's so haunted, because apparently, this is literally, I'm going to tell you the story summed up and why I didn't need to cover it. So apparently, the house, which is like very small and not very nice, which I guess makes sense because doctors back then
How does
weren't.
It compare to the Vliskax murder house? Bigger or smaller? Nicer or less nice?
Less nice.
That's shocking because the Vliskax murder house ain't that grand.
I think it's adorable.
It's not cute. It's not very nice though.
Here, I'll show you them different.
So it's a it's
raggedy
like a
shack is what little, it looks like to me.
Little like Gothic revival Tudor-esque something or other bungalow creature.
Like it looks nicer from the side, I suppose. It looks bigger.
Yeah, it has that bay window situation happening.
Yeah, I think it's cuter.
There's more characters.
I couldn't say it's bigger.
No, I think the Sally house is bigger.
But it's so cute. Even back then.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. So anyway, the Sally house. So apparently it used to be home to some doctor. And this freaking patient named Sally had to come in. And she needed to get her appendix removed or something. But apparently he started operating on her in his own home, which I don't believe was also his office. But
yeah,
anyway,
that's not normally where he operates.
I don't think so. So anyway, he's operating on her at his home. Doesn't let the anesthesia kick in or whatever, so apparently she's still awake, and she screams and then dies on the operating table. Because they all did, apparently. And so she's supposed to, like, haunt the house. And I just don't get why that's such a covered story. And why it's so haunted by one little girl.
Who, like, obviously needed emergency surgery if they weren't
if
going
the story's
to his
even
office.
True. That's why
it's, like, hearsay as well.
I don't know.
That's
maybe
like,
there is documentation on it or whatever, but the story to me just seems very made up and not. So anyway, I read all that and I was like, maybe I should cover it. And then I was like,
Wait, it's just that?
Because I was like, maybe there's more people don't know, but it just seems like a dumb, made up story. And maybe, like, that house is so run down, raccoons just scratch in the middle of the night, and it's not a ghost.
Just the squirrels in the walls.
Yeah, I don't know. It just didn't.
Listen, squirrels in the walls are the creepiest sound in the world.
Reading their little description about it, I was like, this doesn't seem.
We had.
Big.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem.
Yeah.
Grand. Anyway, that's the Sally House. So it's supposed to be a really haunted town, the most haunted town in Kansas. And Amelia Earhart is from there. So that's the more you know about Atchison, I guess. So on to the hauntings. So this is very short as well, but this was
we got a
like
bonus.
One of the most interesting stories.
We got a bonus story. We got
coming
the Sally
out of
House.
Kansas. Yeah, that's your Cliff Notes version of Sally
yeah,
House.
Yeah, no, because I was looking for paranormal stuff for Kansas originally, too. Not just because I didn't know what either of us were doing it, so I was sort of trying to get a feel of what I wanted to do for a story. And I was looking, and I was like, okay, well, there's, like, Fort... Oh, it's not Leonard Wood. What's the other one?
I don't know.
L. Starts with an L. It's going to kill me. Hold on, let me figure it out. Because it's like, relevant to what
Fort
I'm about
Leopold.
To say. No, it's not Fort Leopold.
Fort Lenny.
And it's not Fort Riley. That is one. It's Fort L. Something. It's long 70.
Fort Lingering.
No.
That's a good name.
Guess better.
I don't know any fort names. Thornberry.
Oh, this hurts me that I can't think of it. Good night. Lauderdale. No, that's not it. That's a town. Why are there so many L's?
In Florida.
Yeah, I know. It's not Leonard Wood. Leavenworth.
I would have never come up
with
that.
It's Fort Leavenworth, which is where the Spanish flu originated, based on, like, tracing.
Why is Kansas the worst?
Stuff.
Well,
anyway,
I guess they gave us Amelia
so
Earhart,
it's where we get, like, the first major set of cases pre-1918, by the way, of the Spanish flu. It really should be called the Kansas flu. Spanish flu is just propaganda.
so from now on this podcast, we will call
the
it
Kansas
the Kansas
flu.
Flu.
So that's there. They had one of the first federal prisons there They also had one of, like, the major military, like, prison detention centers there. Like, so many people have been, like, crazy executed at Fort Leavenworth. Jeez. And there's not a single solid, like, resource on paranormal activity that might be happening at any one of those locations.
Let's write a book, Sadie.
And it was, I was like, how is there nothing for this? Why is this the one fort in the entire
because it's
continent
in Kansas,
that
no
doesn't
one
have anything
about
on it?
Kansas.
It's true. It's so true. It was so frustrating. I was like, I know.
They're watching The Wizard of Oz, and then they go, wonder how Kansas is doing right now. And then it leaves their mind immediately.
If they realize, they mean Kansas. Like,
well,
I know they
says,
say.
She says, we're not in Kansas
just
anymore.
Because you say that doesn't mean they realize
we're
they were in Kansas.
We're not in Aberdeen, Kansas. South Dakota anymore. That's
you
more
remember.
Accurate. Yeah, I do. Okay. So, hauntings. There are reports of lights turning off and on in the tower, which doesn't have electricity.
That's fun.
So I don't know what kind of light, maybe a spirit orb, or there used to be like candles up there. Ghost candles. That's
ghost
fun.
Candles.
Okay. So figures have been seen in the windows when no one is home, mm-hmm. outside. People walk by and they see people. Once there was a speaker thrown off a counter and boxes have been reported to move.
Fun.
Don't know how far, but still fun. There's a rocking chair in the house, and all the articles that I saw about this place said that Goldie, which was the nickname of Isabel Altus, the violinist.
Eccentric? No.
Yeah.
The eccentric lady.
Yeah. All the articles said that she died in that chair because she killed herself in that chair.
But I thought she
but
sold
she,
the house because she couldn't afford
yeah,
it.
Yeah, she literally sold the house like 2 or 3 years before she died.
Yeah.
So unless for some reason that man let her just live in the house for years.
Or that was her chair and then it got for some
yeah.
reason sent to the house and they kept it.
I don't know. But they say that she died in it.
I don't think so.
And apparently she killed herself in it.
I'm gonna call someone's bluff on that.
Yeah. I just was like, this is contradicting itself. It literally contradicted itself because it said above on the page that she uh-huh. had sold the house right, pretty recently before she died.
Yeah.
And then at the bottom, they're like, she died in this chair and that's the house. And I was like, oh, wrong.
I think that's
I'm gonna say that's wrong.
Local lore to
anyway,
explain why the house might be creepy.
Yeah, I don't get it. So there's a rocking chair in the house, and it has been seen rocking back and forth on its own, which is just always the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Doors get slammed throughout the night, so people can, like, do tours in here and do, like, nighttime tours.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Throughout the night? During the day? Okay. A little spooky. At nighttime?
The chair?
And it's not just being closed. Being slammed.
The chair and the doors still make me think the house just has weird pressure issues. Not that it's, like, a weird movement-based haunting.
Never know. So, people have heard footsteps walking down the hallways and on the second floor throughout the night, which I hate
that. I don't like footsteps.
Footsteps is just like, you know what?
I don't
couldn't you just,
like
levitate
footsteps.
Across the ground so I don't hear you? Anyway, so that's terrible. Where was I?
Footsteps.
Items get moved from one location to another, which I always like that. I think that's funny.
Yeah.
Because the ghost is like, you know what? I'm just going to inconvenience you a little bit. I'm not going to take it forever. Just going to think you're going crazy. Ghosts like to gaslight people, too. People will hear creaks of doorknobs being turned, which is gross. And I'm assuming they, like, hear a noise. And they're like, what was that? It sounded like, you know, like metal or something.
Uh-huh.
So they go test stuff out and then find that it's a doorknob being turned. I'd throw up. That's so terrible. The door to one of the sitting rooms upstairs opens on its own, and there's a shadow person that's, like, associated with this, which makes me, like, picture you seeing a little, like, shadow, like, opening the door, which that's terrible, which I don't know if that's what it is, but
that's
what I
thought
of.
They see shadow peoples, and
that door's
the
one that opens.
Move, yeah.
Guests have noticed the scent of a powdery woman's perfume. Which
yep.
I don't know what that would smell like.
You're like
baby powder.
Powder? Yeah.
And the hint of cigarettes.
Fine.
Which could also just be people in the house that smoke.
it could have been someone literally ever smoked in the house ever in the existence of the house, because that stuff never truly leaks.
No, it's so gross. People have heard, this is my favorite one, and it's the last point. People have heard disembodied voices having a full-on conversation where they can actually make out the words that they're saying.
It's not just like voices.
It's people. It's like me and you. Someone's standing in the hall hearing me and you talking, and they open the door and no one's there.
Ew.
That's fun. So, they literally will check the whole house and no one's there. And this happens like on multiple occasions. Yeah, like the workers say that this is like a big thing. Because they're like, oh, because people can do like self-guided tours and stuff here. So I would assume they can't just freely go into the home. Well, yeah, you can if there's workers there. I don't know how it works, but so yeah, that happens a lot. And that's probably my favorite, because normally you hear like muffled conversations from ghosts.
Or like technically could be outside, someone on the street.
And then you look and there's no one there. But like hearing actual like people carrying on a full blown conversation.
I wonder what they talk about.
Parties.
Just
gotta
parties.
Be. It's the only probably thing the Sally House. They're probably discussing the Sally House and why it's not haunted.
Can you believe they still think it's haunted?
Can you believe? We're the most haunted house in this town. You and me, we know it. We're sitting here. We're ghosts. I know. Okay. And that's the end of my story. Kansas doesn't have that many great hauntings. At least not well known to the internet.
I think they probably have plenty of great hauntings. It's just not
on the internet for me to find easily.
So are we ready?
I'm ready.
So, I'm going to talk about Bloody Bill Anderson.
Oh, all right.
My singular source is Wikipedia, because there's a lot on him that I just needed one source. And then when I was looking at other sources, a lot of them were like, you know, like Legends of America, like we've used that one before. But the problem, it was like literally the legends surrounding Bloody Bill Anderson, not facts about Bloody Bill Anderson. Yeah. So it was like including made up ways that his like father was killed.
Oh. Like the rocking chair.
Yeah, just like straight up made up things.
Because at first, that's what like drew me to the story. I was like, oh, a haunted rocking chair was someone like found dead in. Because I saw that the wife had died in the house.
Yeah, so you thought it was going to be her.
And then I read that it's that lady and I was like, this doesn't even add up.
No, so there's a lot of lore around Bloody Bill Anderson, which I find very frustrating because there's actually very few sources on him because of that. That are I can trust.
Another book opportunity.
Right? Another book opportunity.
You know, maybe we should just get famous by writing haunted books.
Yeah, just like accurate histories of famous like folklore kind of thing.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting thing to do. So
I'm a good writer.
You're a very good writer. I'm a good researcher. We can combine it.
I said, I'm a good writer.
And a good talker.
I can't say you're not a good writer because I don't know. You just say you aren't, so I assume you aren't.
I'm a very disorganized writer if I don't have a clear train of thought.
I mean, chaotic. I can be, but then I go back and fix it.
I can't go fix it, though, is my problem.
Yeah.
So let's start talking about Bloody Bill. So William T. Anderson, which is obviously his, you know, full name. He wasn't born
William.
A baby and named a Bloody Bill. So William T. Anderson was born around 1840 in Hopkins County, Kentucky. His schoolmates described him as well-behaved and a reserved child, which is, I don't know who was interviewing his schoolmates in
the newspapers. They did for the fire. Remember that?
But they're in Kentucky.
That great fire. And they were in Mississippi.
No, I mean, the children he went to school with were in Kentucky. He left when he was a kid. It's not like he grew up there, lived there a long time, and then like moved to Kansas. It seems a little bit sketchier.
Down.
Yeah.
Maybe it was someone that was like, oh, I knew him growing up.
Uh-huh. He was like a normal old guy.
He was so neighborly.
Really, he's just someone who wanted to be in the newspaper.
You know, reserved. A little weird, so I guess, now looking back.
His family moved to Huntsville, Missouri, as a child.
Yeah.
And then eventually moved to the Kansas Territory in 1857. So he spends about equal amounts of his childhood in Hopkins County, Kentucky, and Huntsville, Missouri. So the Anderson family was poor. They did not ever own slaves, but they did support slavery. So here's a random interesting fact that has nothing to do with the rest of the story. But his mother did die in 1860 because she was struck by lightning.
Oh, wow.
It's not part of his, like, villain origin story. It's just, like, a
You know, that's really God fact. Saying you shouldn't be on that side of the war, but you are. So, time to die.
So, while in Kansas, both Bill and one of his brothers each killed at least one Native American.
During when?
Just when they're living in Kansas.
When they're still young?
It's before the Civil War. So it's in between 1857 and 1861. He is 17 so in 1857. So he's not old. He's basically a child.
Great.
So his brother had absolutely no excuse for this, so he had to flee to Iowa. Because it was just, like, straight-up murder. But Bill claimed...
I was going to say, is there a reason?
Racism, Audrey.
Well, yeah, but, like...
No, that was it. That's the reason.
Okay.
Bill claimed it was in self-defense, because there was an attempted robbery that was trying to happen, but me thinks that's untrue.
It's called a lie.
So, Bill starts making a living trading horses. So he's, like, going into Missouri and buying horses and then selling them for more money in Kansas. So he's definitely, like, gypping the people he's selling the horses to and probably buying the horses from.
Or so, stealing them.
But it's, no. At this point, he's doing it legitimately.
Okay.
This is a business.
If you say so.
Because at the start of the Civil War in 1861, there's an increased demand for horses, therefore he's not getting the same prices.
Yeah.
So it's not profitable anymore. So, he decides to turn to stealing them and then reselling them, but he knows he can't do it locally. He'll be caught, so he'll resell them in, like, New Mexico. Like, literally, he resold some of his stolen horses in New Mexico.
That's a far way to travel. Yeah.
His dad ran, like, some sort of trade caravan between Kansas and New Mexico, so mm-hmm. It was, like, on at something he knew the way for. So in late 1861, Bill and one of his brothers, Jim, who was not the one who was in hiding in Iowa.
Yeah.
That was a different
Another
one.
Brother.
So Bill, brother Jim, and their friend, Judge Baker. Judge is a first name, not a title. It's not his job. head south to try to join the Confederate Army.
Cute.
On the way, they are mistaken by the Union's 6th Regiment, Kansas Volunteer Cavalry in Vernon County, Missouri, as Confederate guerrillas. Bill and Jim escape, but Baker is captured, spends 4 months in prison, eventually is convinced to claim loyalty to the Union.
I was going to say, I mean, they weren't wrong.
Oh, yeah, it's true. They're not Confederates.
I mean, they're not doing that, but they
so,
are.
So Baker is, you know, it's like he's claimed loyal to the Union. Now he has to prove it. Essentially, now he's out of prison. He has to, like,
LOL.
Turn in other Confederates, cut ties with people who were, you know, suspicious and such. So, you know, he starts with cutting ties with his former lover, Mary, who was Bill's sister.
Peace out, Mary.
Your family ain't worth it. So this becomes, like, a problem. Is he sort of seems to mean it when he's saying that he is loyal to the Union.
Yeah.
Because he starts turning people in. So in May of 1862, he issues an arrest warrant for Lee Griffith, who was part of Bill's horse trafficking business. So he's, like, definitely not a good guy. Also friends with, like, a known Confederate.
Yeah.
The Anderson brothers. So, locals suspect the Andersons were helping hide Griffith, which was true. And these accusations led to warrant for their arrest. And also really pissed off Bill's father, William. Because he didn't believe his sons were doing these things. He was not exactly, like, present at home because he's, you know, running this long-distance trading business. I hope that's the case, and he's not.
Me
just
and
being
my
a,
racist sons would never.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
That's also possible, but he does decide to, like, take this whole warrant business into his own hands. So he heads to Council Grove Courthouse with a gun, with the intent of forcing Baker to revoke the warrant. Be like, no, you didn't see that. Like, get rid of that. You know.
Yeah.
This obviously didn't end well. Taking a gun to a courthouse generally doesn't.
That's why they don't let you take him in anymore.
Upon entering the courthouse, he is obviously restrained. He's restrained by a constable. So, like, you know, an authority. And then is fatally shot by Baker?
Oh!
Question mark?
Whoa!
Not to say that Baker didn't do it, but it's questionable as to why Baker shot him when the man had already been restrained. So this is obviously upsetting to Bill that his father was shot in a courthouse while being restrained by his once friend.
You know?
This is his villain origin story. So Bill was arrested shortly after, but released because there was an issue with the warrant. So, you know, some legal technicality. So he takes this opportunity to flee to Agnes City because he, for obvious reasons, feared that he would just be, like, loosely hanged. Like, the justice system wouldn't work for him. Because he's in a territory. He's not in a state. He's in the Kansas Territory. At least I think it's still a territory then. I might be terribly wrong.
I don't know.
I don't know when Kansas became a state.
Never.
Maybe it's a state by then. Either way, people just do get loosely hanged out west, so... They also get loosely hanged out other places, but we're not talking about that today.
That story is for another time.
So, you know, he's obviously miffed about the situation, but he is just can't, like, it's he's done. He's no longer on any side of reasonable okayness once he finds out that Baker's claim of self-defense, because that's the claim he uses for the judge. It's like, no, but I shot him in self-defense, sir.
I mean, he wasn't wrong,
Here's the thing. He was there to threaten his life with the gun. But once one is restrained, you can't use self-defense as, like, your reasoning to shoot somebody. Yeah.
You're like, they were holding him back, but he kept saying he was going to punch me. Like, okay.
Yeah. So that's it for Bill. Bill is taking justice into his own hands. So Bill and Jim, because Jim is with him at, in this other location, start heading back to, it said Missouri, but that made no sense to me. They start heading back to Council Grove, which I don't think is in Missouri. Along the way, they're, you know, robbing travelers to support themselves and such, because, you know, like, what else are you gonna do? There's no resources in the middle of nowhere. So on July 2nd, 1862, Bill and Jim arrive in Council Grove, where they trick Baker and his brother-in-law into arriving at a store where they ambush them. They do this by, they had, like, a different guy with them, like, that Baker didn't know.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, can you, like, go up to them and be like, where's the store? Can you take me to the store? I'm entirely unsure as to where the store is. And so this guy goes and does this, and the guys are like, okay, we'll help you to the store. And that's where they ambush them. So Baker and his brother, there's, like, a shootout. There's a gunfight. Baker and his brother make it into the store basement. You know, they think it's a great place to hide out. Until the Andersons barricade them in and then set the store on fire. Which obviously kills them.
Jeez.
So here's when we get into the mild crooks to genuine bad guys.
All right.
Time for Bill and
Actual
Jim.
Actual psychopaths.
Yeah, like, for sure. Like... Not that Bill hadn't killed that, you know, one Native American man earlier, but you know he does not think that's the same thing as killing these white men.
Yeah.
So Bill and Jim now obviously form a gang. What else are you going to do once you've murdered two men in a barricaded basement fire in a store? So now it's arson and murder.
You know.
So
he's like, now that we have some street cred, let's start a gang.
So they start a gang. They start with Bill Reed. They go east to Jackson County, Missouri. Obviously robbing people along the way to support themselves, including some Union soldiers. And by 1863, they had killed 7 Union soldiers.
Great.
I assume they've also been killing, like, loose Anybody civilians else on as the well.
Way. Yeah.
But the point is, these are Confederate war criminals, so we gotta talk about the Union troops, the innocent Union troops that they killed along the way.
Okay.
Which they truly did kill a lot of, like, just like Union troops returning home, no longer armed, just happen to be in their uniforms blues still because they don't have anything else to wear. A real thing that they kept doing. Yeah. So I think that's part of why that's mentioned that way. So in May 1863, they join up with the Quantrill Raiders, who are headed by William Quantrill. They are a Confederate guerrilla group. And by the summer of 1863, he is named a lieutenant. So now he's in charge of his own group of little guerrillas that are working under Quantrill.
Okay.
So he commands, in the beginning, 30 to 40 men in his little guerrilla unit, which include Archie Clement, who is probably the worst person next to maybe... No, here's the thing. Jesse James is a bad guy. Frank James is a bad guy. They did bad things. Archie Clement is a straight-up psychopath. I think Jesse and Frank have a higher body count, but they didn't do the same things that Archie Clement did. Archie Clement is 18 years old, by the way.
Oh.
At this point in history, in 1863. And his specialization was torture and mutilation.
Oh. I can only especially imagine when he did the animals loved it. When he was little.
Mm-hmm. He's like a genuinely ill. Like, there's no way he is. Like, I don't, if he was brought to a court of law, I think he would, the ruling of insanity would definitely apply to him.
Yeah.
So, we get to the summer, he's a lieutenant, he's in charge of these lovely people. In August of 1863, Bill's brutality escalates.
Great.
So he's, you know, your average guerrilla soldier, you know, killing other soldiers as you come across them.
But they're not even, like, fighting a war. Are they?
Yeah, they are. These are all little conflicts. There's a whole bunch of, like, little bands of troops from both sides.
Well, I thought this was just they're killing everybody while they're just trying to find one guy.
Who? No, this is a genuine part of the war.
Oh, okay.
These are, you know, soldiers fighting soldiers. Okay, okay, but okay. Rather than, like, big, you know... giant battlefields where everybody's lined up in rows. It's loose pockets of men.
I thought this was still them just like, well, might as well kill these people.
No, they've joined up now.
Okay. Because when you said he's a lieutenant or whatever, I just thought like, he's a guerrilla lieutenant. They're just giving him a weird name.
No.
For the gang.
No, this is military.
Okay.
It's not, like, as official as, like, other portions of the military are, because just, you know, the Confederacy was a little bit haphazard anyway when it came to a lot of that. But no, these are war crimes. August of 1863, his brutality escalates after a building in Kansas City collapses. So this building collapses. Now, this is, On a normal average day, obviously not a problem for most soldiers when a random building collapses. The problem is that the Union had been rounding up all the women folk of the guerrilla soldiers, and they had housed them all in this building that collapsed. It may or may not have collapsed on purpose.
Was it on purpose or was it like just
fully... It's never been
proven.
The Confederate guerrillas obviously think it was on purpose. It's probably not, it's probably within reason to think they did collapse it on purpose.
But also, you know, like I said, with the woman getting struck by lightning, maybe it's just God
saying.
Sometimes
that just happens.
It's your time. They said, anyway. You know, if this isn't right, God, strike me down. And he said, all right, lightning, and now building collapse.
One of the individuals who died was an Anderson sister. And that made the war, people think Bill escalates
now
from here.
It's
because
personal.
Exactly, because it's personal now. Before it was just like a loosey-goosey thing he could do because he, you know, didn't have any other legitimate means of business. Might as well go kill some people. Now it's, you know, a revenge war.
All right.
So August 21st, 1863, the Lawrence Massacre takes place. This is in Lawrence, Kansas. Around 450 raiders attack the town of Lawrence, Kansas. It is just a town, by the way. There's not, like, Union troops stationed here. It is just a town.
So what's the point?
There was a reason I did not write it down because it was not relevant to
yeah.
Bill, because he was doing it with the Quantrill Raiders. It was something yeah. that was relevant to some other large scheme that, again, I thought I had less time. So it resulted in 164 deaths of the people of Lawrence.
Yeah.
And most of them were unarmed men and boys because they were going there specifically to kill the men and boys. So the victims appear to have been targeted because, like, there's, like, you know, some weird Passover things happening. Not everyone's getting hit.
Yeah.
That, like, if they were just going out there blatantly to kill all the men and boys, they would have killed all of the men and
yeah.
boys, not just the ones that, you know, I'm assuming are, like, known Union sympathizers.
Yeah.
So on top of things being targeted, there was also a weird disproportionate amount of the deaths that were attributed to Bill and his men. So they were really getting into it.
Of course.
So, like, for example, a group of men and their sons surrendered. You know, because they didn't want to die.
Yeah.
Under the promise of safety, only to basically immediately be slaughtered. Like, haha, stupid.
That's how it now you're goes. Dead.
Very unfortunate. There was a father who was working in the field, like, not taking part in the conflict at all, had to get those crops out yeah. or something, who was shot in front of his son. There was a sick man lying in bed who was basically shot at point-blank range, like, literally couldn't do anything. He's sick in bed. they forced a few men into a burning building and watched them slowly burn to death.
Oh.
So it's not like they threw them in there to kill them. They watched afterwards. They're like, yes. Listen to the screams. Which is, like, terribly upsetting. And of all of Bill's men, our dear, terrible friend, Archie Clement, and Jesse James, you know, lovely brother Frank James, were reported to be the most prolific of the killers. They were just going at it. So both James brothers are in Anderson's group, by the way. Both Jesse and Frank James
okay.
are part of Bloody Bill Anderson's troop within the Quantrill Raiders. So after the Lawrence Massacre, they all go hide in Texas for a bit. And I mean, like, the Quantrill Raiders and everybody involved in that. Just all yeah. tootle on down to Texas, chill there for a little bit. I don't know if this is until they get bored or run out of money. Run out of victims. In 1864, they returned to Missouri. At one point in time, they encounter, and this is just Anderson's men. They all return, but Anderson's men are doing this new activity I'm talking about.
The gang.
Yeah, the gang. Like, encounter a little Union militia, like, they were not meaning to, neither of them were meaning to encounter each other, and they slaughter 12 of the 15 men that were there, and scalp one of them.
Oh.
After the Lawrence Massacre, apparently scalpings begin.
Oh.
They get inspired by, I don't know what, I don't care what, little boy. But they, no, it's literally Archie who's doing the scalping. I think this is one of the first, like, noted in the area scalpings from the Anderson group.
Yeah.
After this, and I think they start picking them up here, but Anderson's men begin to wear Union uniforms that they take from the soldiers they kill. So now they're in disguise. And this makes it so that locals begin to fear Union soldiers because they assume they're Confederates in disguise. Because they would go and, like, you know, steal, murder, kill, pillage, etc.
Do whatever, yeah.
In these disguises, which is, I mean, it's fair for you to be wary if it's a possibility.
Yeah.
So September 24th, 1864... Anderson and 80 men, all dressed as Union troops, blockade the rail line in Centralia, Missouri. On the train, there were 24 unarmed Union soldiers who were heading home after the Battle of Atlanta. So just at this point, essentially civilians trying to go back home. They just saw, you know, war at its worst. They're not trying to fight. Anderson's men very specifically split up the civilians from these 24 soldiers and then execute the 24 soldiers after forcing them to strip.
Oh.
So they all strip down. I'm pretty sure they all line up and then they're basically shot at point blank. I don't think it's like a shooting squad. I think it's just the back of the head kind of one, from what I understood. After that, they're mutilated and, of course, scalped.
Stop it.
Because Archie has a problem. The train was then set on fire. I assume no one's in it, because why else would you split up the people? So they set the train on fire, they send it down the tracks, and then they torch the depot and leave town. So this leads to the Battle of Centralia, because obviously troops are now in the area for, you know, this horrific thing that happened. We've 100% done work on this battlefield, by the way, like when we were little with metal detectors with Dad. We've helped on the Centralia battlefield. So this was a battle of 147 Union versus 80 guerrillas. 123 of the 147 Union soldiers were killed.
Oh my gosh.
Only 3 Confederate guerrillas were.
Oh my gosh.
Definitely somebody had the upper hand here.
That's a crazy little boy.
And it wasn't because like they knew the land or something better. It's because they were outgunned. The Union cavalry had muzzle loaders, which are not practical on a horse or in general. And the guerrillas all had revolvers. So they're just simply getting off more shots in a quicker time frame. So he obviously, like, continues doing this stuff until his death. But as I was reading through his history, the entire time that they're talking about all of these, like, these terrible things he's doing, they're like, yeah, but one time they were, they robbed this random guy and then Bill realized he knew him, so he gave him all his stuff back. Or he would just, like, make friends in hotels and then, like, you know, rob somebody and then give them some of the loot and continue on. So they're making him sound like this Robin Hood figure. So maybe these stories are true. Maybe he was doing these things, but also they really feel like propaganda to make him sound better than he was, really Robin Hood-y, because they do the same thing with Jesse James. People really like Jesse James in a positive way because they've made him sound Robin Hood-y. And that makes me very uncomfortable that they, like, maybe he was doing these things. Maybe he did appreciate. Yeah, but
all the friends he made were also racist.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's like
psychopaths.
It's like, it doesn't make him.
And I bet the people that wrote that, here's why he's good, are also racist psychopaths.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Be wary.
He's not a good guy.
So he.
Red flag.
He died in the skirmish of Albany, Missouri, October 26th. 1864.
Finally.
So they're having this skirmish. He and the son of a Confederate general were the only ones to charge forward during this skirmish. I don't know what happened to the son of the Confederate general, but I do know he got, like, shot in the back of the head while doing this, like, charge forward to be, like, super impressive. And that's how he died at, like, the age of, like, he was, like, young. He was, yeah. I think he was, like, in his, like, late 20s. So he did not live very long. After he dies, Archie Clement took up leadership. Ain't that great?
Oh, dear.
But the group splintered by mid-November. So he dies in October, mid-November. They are no longer a group. Most of the men do go and join the Quantrill Raiders. They're not, like, done doing their guerrilla stuff. They're just not in this specific group anymore. And that whole group moves down to Texas again.
They liked it there.
I think it was probably more agreeable. Everyone there was pro-slavery, as that was not the case in both Missouri and Kansas by this time. So that is Bloody Bill Anderson.
Wow. I think that's one of the worst ones we've covered.
Which I did not think about when I was, like, writing it. But, like, did you ever learn about him?
I feel like I've heard his name.
But, like, we've also worked on the Battle of Centralia, so...
Well, yeah, but he also has a connection to Jesse James. And yeah. I think maybe that's why.
That he's been mentioned in passing with.
Yeah.
When Jesse James ran with Bloody Bill Anderson.
Probably.
Something like that. Sorry. So, yeah, for a second I didn't think he was, like, an appropriate topic, but I realized, no, these are all crimes, and I've covered, like, just Wild West gangs.
He's a murderer.
Yeah, no, he's all of the right things.
True crime was as much as stealing a banana. Or something like that.
But it felt more historic than ones we had done in the past.
Yeah.
Not that, like, old-timey West gangs are,
I think it's funny, while all that's happening with that guy, my man's just out here making saddles and...
I know, that's harnesses. What I was thinking. I was like,
like, it's literally around the exact same time, and this guy's just like, I'll mm-hmm. build a mansion, I'll build up my town.
Yep. That's when you were going through. I was like, this is funny, because they're, like, decently close together.
Yeah.
It's all happening on the east side of Kansas.
All right, well, I guess that's the end of our episode. Try not to kill anyone, and don't mess with Ouija boards. Bye.